IVM.
Welcome to All Things Policy, a daily podcast supported by Pragati, a flagship media initiative of the Takshashila Institution. We're a bunch of policy nerds based in Bengaluru, and we like to bring a fresh perspective to Indian affairs and an Indian perspective to global affairs. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and join us for today's chat.
Hello and welcome to another episode of All Things Policy. My name is Sudisha and I'm a junior research scholar at the Takshashila Institution working on a 20 million jobs project. Our podcast guest for today is Uttara Narayanan, founder of Buzz Women India. Her organization empowers rural women economically, psychologically and socially by providing them access to knowledge, skills and tools at their doorstep. Uttara's work has been pivotal in ensuring that women of our country get access to free education and skill advancement. Welcome to the show, Uttara.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
So the first question that I'd want to ask you is if you can tell us about Buzz Women and how you started it and what's happening right now.
Sure. So the question I started when this started 10 years back was, how do women come out of poverty? That was the question I was trying to answer. And I realized that there are multiple fronts in which, like Amartya Sen says, there's multidimensional poverty. It's not just one dimensional. So there are multiple places where there was some bit of knowledge, skills and tools required for the women. And I began with financial literacy because I'm a cost accountant and my father was a banker. So I had that financial bend of mind. So that's how we started it. But very quickly to realize that as we had initially thought of, there are multiple dimensions and we have to work on all aspects. So what we work on is, we call it 5 C's, cash, confidence, community, climate and care. Cash meaning women being able to improve their own financial security. Community is women using the power of the collective. Confidence is women being certain of their own abilities. Climate is women combating everyday effects of climate change in their life, and care where they're able to take care of their health, nutrition, and hygiene. So as you see, it is a holistic sort of program that we bring to the doorstep of the women, and which is what our USP is, that we go to the last mile, we go to the hamlet level, where we engage with the Anganwadi teacher, and the Anganwadi teacher mobilizes the self-help group women. And that's how the program runs. And we are in Southeast Karnataka in 9 districts. And in these 9 districts, we've reached around 3.64 lakh women. So we begin with financial literacy. Why we begin with financial literacy is, firstly, the Anganwadi teacher has a mandate on doing financial literacy with the self-help group women. And the way they have handled it is bringing the self-help group women together. And what we provide is that additional sort of ability for the Anganwadi teacher to be able to do that self-help group or bring that self-help group better. And we call it inner strength training or self-shakti training. It's 2 half-a-day sessions. And it's also because it's a good inroad to, one, build trust with the community, with the women, because they want to understand, how do I save better? How do I earn more? And we take a bus to the villages, set up a tent, a training where the women come together, and 2 half-a-day sessions are done. It's an experiential model with games, with women doing activities, talking to each other, role plays happening, where they can manage their finances better, basics of entrepreneurship. A lot of them are running enterprises. And also some bit of personal development, because there is an aspect of behavioral economics in this, right? How do you manage money? What is your relationship with money? So that's how we begin.
Great. Thanks for answering that question. And for our next question, I'd like to introduce Soumya Prabhakar, who is the head of corporate affairs at the Takshashila Institution. Soumya, welcome to the show as well. You wanted to ask a question about financial literacy.
Yeah, thanks, Sudisha. Hi, Uttara. Very inspiring to see how 5 C's are actually bringing about the change that's so visible, right? And I'm sure it's satisfying. But while you talk about financial literacy being something that you empower women with, are there tools and frameworks that you use to kind of teach them how to go about it? Because it still seems like a complex one where there is unbanked community. There are people who still have banks which are far off in the rural areas, which they can't access. So how do you go about doing this?
Yeah. So Soumya, the thing is, firstly, the unbanked community, all of them have bank accounts now, though they are not transacting in it. It is there because the government has the Jan Dhan Yojana, which started a couple of years back. And because of that, banking has, at least they have access to it. The thing is, they're not using it because, like you said, it is far away and they lose a day's wage or a day's income if they go to the bank and transact. So that is a huge challenge that they have. So the tools that we're giving, we begin with actually managing their expenses. Because every single woman we know is in the cycle of debt. Like she's managing with 3 or 4 loans that is there, maybe the self group, the MFI, the money lender. So how do you manage your expenses and be sure of also the percentage? So a lot of them also don't even understand how much interest am I paying on each of these loans. They'll say, you know, 5 for 100. For every 100 rupees, I'm paying 5 rupees. Or is it monthly or weekly or is it yearly? Those kind of tools are what we are giving them to understand their own liability. Understand managing their expenses at home. So we have these booklets that we give them in which they can write income and expenditure. How much is my income for the month or the family income? See, it also provides them a tool to have those conversations at home, right? Because see, in a lot of cases, the financial situation at home is also because they don't know each other's income. They don't know how much each family member is spending. Everybody is managing their own money, especially in a joint family setup. So giving them tools also to build confidence that they can have these conversations. So there is a booklet in which we say, hey, can you have this conversation about what are the different sources of income and expenditure? Most often women say, hey, that's not a conversation I can have at home. People are going to say, you know, this is not your domain. You don't need to know this. So we have a role play around how do you have conversation. Role plays even for a customer, like how do you talk? How do you convince somebody to say this is important? If you see in a financial conversation, it's very confrontational, saying you don't earn enough or you're spending too much money. How do you bring that conversation to become more productive? To make it like a dialogue to say, hey, the problem is not you or me. The problem is that the pot of money is less. How do we ensure that we can increase that, manage our expenses and make sure we are not stressed? So I would say financial literacy in a lot of ways is also about the communication and that influencing skill that you can use. Of course, there is the technical aspects of, you know, assets and liabilities, loans and interest rates, and what are the different mechanisms of saving? How much should I save every month if I have a goal? So setting a goal for it. So all those are for me the drier sort of subjects, which has to be, of course, known. But the major portion for me is your relationship with money. How do you see it? And what's the relationship of the family with regard to money?
That's interesting, Utra. I think one question that I wanted to ask was that, you know, recently we released a research document on women labor force participation in India and why it's declining. And all our research is based off the internet, all the sources that we are reading online. Since you have field experience with respect to, you know, how rural women go about their lives, how financially literate they are, I wanted to know, you know, for people like us sitting in an urban environment, are we underestimating the true state of women, the rural women in India, or is it better?
Well, the thing is, when I look at statistics myself and I read it, it says that 30% of women in rural India are in the labor force. I feel it's a much larger number because a lot of rural India is connected to agriculture. And if you ask women, by the way, even in our own baseline survey, so when we take demographics, if you ask the women, what do? Most often they would say, I'm a housewife. By the way, this word housewife in English has become very popular in rural India, thanks to media, thanks to, you know, advertisements and serials and etc. So they say housewife, but if you probe saying really, you know, what else do you do? They would most often say, hey, I have a cow that I take care of. There is agriculture and I contribute to it. So I feel that 30% number seems a little low for me. The other thing is age, right? In our demographic, the average age is 39 years. What we also realized is the younger women, by the way, are not really participating as much because after they're married, settling into a new household, plus children, raising the children up till a point that they don't need care in the sense of, you know, regular care is, I would say, what is sort of stopping them from getting into regular work. So even agriculture, if they have younger children, they would not really, you know, start off. They will not buy a cow until they know that they can take care of the cow. So one, like I said, I think the percentage of participation is much higher in rural because of their setups. But I also feel it is after a certain age. I would say after 30, 35 is when women start participating. much more.
Okay, that's an interesting insight, Putra. So piling on to the same context, right? Also curious to understand, are these like the first generation of women? Though you said there's a mix up of, you know, somebody categorically saying, you know, one is a housewife, whereas they're still engaged in some sort of employment, which is very disguised. Do you think there are like a first generation of women trying to become entrepreneurs? And is there a U-curve of sorts when the household income reaches a particular point and they pivot into, again, deciding to be at home?
Yes. So entrepreneurship has become bigger because the agriculture income has reduced and they are trying to find other sources of income. Animal husbandry is very big because it is very much connected to agriculture and it's the easiest thing according to them because along with their farm, they are able to take care of the animals as well. So I would say animal husbandry has become, and also if you know in Karnataka, there is the Milk Federation, which will buy the milk back. So that is also an easier way for them to increase their income, right? The other is tailoring has become big. I would say because of the, you know, skill development, etc. There is also beauty parlor, or not very big, but still some amount. Women are coming out more to increase their income, to be able to enhance the household income, but also because they feel that they are creative. They want to do something, want to stand on their feet. I feel it is a little more than the previous generation. And we are seeing first generation entrepreneurs as well, though there are households with, you know, the second generation. So the mother-in-law would have done some business and she would take over. And the curve, by the way, that you're talking about, I would say is not just related to income. It is also related to the household circumstance in the sense of that as a mother-in-law, I'm an entrepreneur. I started, let's say, a kirana shop, a mom and pop shop. But after a while, after the son is married, the daughter-in-law comes in and she sort of takes over from me. It still continues to be a family business in that way. The other is when the children have migrated out, the children have got a different income source, which could be more white-collar jobs, even blue-collar jobs, and they are in the city or in a town, then they would say, okay, you know, now I don't need to earn anymore because the kids are so-called settled and I don't need to do this. So that is also another reason for the curve. I don't know if income is the only, income could be one of it, but I don't see entrepreneurship itself giving them so much income that they can now sit back and say, hey, I've, you know, I'm exiting and I don't need any more money.
That makes sense. I think the next question that I wanted to ask was, could you demonstrate some tangible outcomes of this skill development program? Because a lot of times we read that while the government has initiated skill development programs in the country, there are not enough jobs to absorb the workforce when they become skilled or when they become more educated than they already are. So is there a challenge like that on the field and how do we solve that?
There is definitely a challenge like that because women want to earn more income. There are not enough jobs available around the areas that they live, obviously. Their own education is not that high that they can get into a formal job in an urban area, or nor can they leave their urban setup and come because there is agriculture also in the parallel happening. So jobs is an issue. More than jobs, income generation is something that is required. And of course, one way that everybody's talking about to be able to counter that is entrepreneurship. Right? Can they have an income generating activity? I think there is also a sort of blur between, is it really entrepreneurship or is it self-employment? That they're self-employed, they are earning some kind of a livelihood. And it is because they started it, we are saying it's entrepreneurship. I have a different definition. I also feel that if they're able to find solutions for themselves and take charge of their problems, I call it, you know, they have an entrepreneurial mindset, which is what we are working towards. So the skilling that we are working on is not the hard skills because we realize we connect with other partners. There are enough other partners like, you know, the Canara Bank, Roots AT. They are doing enough trainings on different skills and we can connect these women to that. What is required is the mindset piece and to think saying, okay, what am I good at? What do I really want to do? Because most often women just look at their neighbors and say, okay, she has a shop, so let me also put up a shop without realizing that the market is only so much. It's only 300 households or 500 households that they can cater to in that particular village. So coming back to your question on what is this really shaping, right? I would say to begin with, it's shaping the fact that women are paying closer attention to their personal and household expenses. They are paying attention to, where's my income coming from? Where are my expenses? How am I saving? They're also inculcating a sustained saving habit. Self-help group movement in this country had started it, but in a way, it was just a transactional thing. Now we are giving them more tools to understand themselves, saying, okay, how do I do this? What is better for me and my household? Women are thinking about credit. They are thinking about loans. They are thinking about how am I using those loans? Women are definitely articulating their goals better, and they're engaging with other women to have these discussions. They are definitely participating more in household decisions, because that's one of the major things about what we do. We believe that agency is very important, and for women to have that agency, they need the tools to access what they feel their inner power to be able to do it. So them opening up what is really required, becoming more conscious of their own loan-seeking behavior and saying, am I getting a loan just because it's available, or do I really need it? So those kind of things are something that our financial literacy, the first two-day program, is being able to achieve. At the same time, we are doing much more than that. So financial literacy is just one step. After that, there is a local woman who is identified by them, who becomes the anchor in that community. And we call her a Gelati. Gelati in Kannada meaning friend, Tati or Sakhi in other languages. This happens is this behavior that is triggered through the financial literacy is sustained because this Gelati keeps bringing them together on a monthly basis and having these conversations. She is demonstrating strong agency. She is demonstrating confidence because we are training her every month, bringing 10 Gelatis together so that she is showcasing these. She becomes the trainer in her village. She facilitates access to different scholarship schemes and all the, you know, government-related entitlements that are there. So she is playing a more proactive role because we are nudging her to do it. At the same time, the women also find it easier to say, hey, here's a coach that I can have conversations with. Here is somebody I can, you know, talk to her about what my problems are. And the idea with this is enhancing the self-image and self-worth of the Gelati so that she is able to do the same for the women. And then the women are able to have those conversations at home and focus on what is really required for their lives to enhance. Of course, we have the Vyapar and the Green program, which is focusing on climate change and on business enhancement, both of which is again to increase their financial needs, to increase their income source, enhance their income source. So overall, if you see, it is about the self-worth, the agency, which then translates to more income and more decision-making power at home.
Yeah, I think especially the SHG movement, what you talked about, Utra, my experience also has been that it's not just a group which comes together to do transactional stuff, but it goes one up in terms of also sharing experiences, learning from each other's, you know, I think just the fact that you get to share in a forum or ask questions, or it could be the kind of schools they want to put their children in. I think there's a broader conversation that happens there, which is useful for the fellow women who attend the meetings as well, right? Now, if we are to think that, you know, there is some savings and how this plays out, do you think women now are more well-prepared to kind of handle a health episode and, you know, make some savings for education of their children? How is that playing out?
Definitely. See, the more savings you have, there is less stress on your mind in terms of where is my next meal going to come from. Also, because if there's a leaking roof or a sudden drought, or there is a situation, there is an emergency, medical emergency, when somebody has an insurance or a saving that is there that they can lean on, there is no stress, right? And which means they can take better decisions when it comes to education. They can take better decisions when it comes to healthcare. Like, I see a lot of women who become ill and they refuse to go to the doctor because they feel, oh, this is going to be an expense. And they just keep continuing to be at home. That will change when they know, yes, I have some savings and I have saved it for such an emergency. Like if I fall ill, I need for it. So, yeah, which is, I feel savings as a habit has been inculcated by the SHG movement, which has been great. It could become much better if they only have it more as a goal, which was missing. So the SHG movement was more around everybody saves 20 rupees a week. Everybody saves 100 rupees a month. Can it be linked back to why am I saving that 100? What pod does it go into? Which envelope can I put this into? And that's where buzz comes in, sort of bringing that attention.
So I think I want to ask the big question now, which is that what exactly needs to change? What kind of governmental support or any other kind of support that you think will be vital in carrying out the work that you're doing or in general, which can help the women in this country?
So one is, I feel in the last 10 years of doing this, it's been a decade since Buzz Women has been doing this, and we have reached 10,000 villages in Karnataka. We still have 60,000. I mean, there are 60,000 villages in Karnataka. So there's a long way to go. So scale is important. I feel more people have to do this work of going to the doorstep of the women, giving them this access to the knowledge, skills and tools. So I feel government can play a huge role in that. We are in partnership with government where they've given us permission to access the women. It's a non-financial agreement that we have with them. But I feel more players have to work on this, which is required for women to come out of their households, to start thinking about their own money and their situation. The other thing that is required is we keep hearing of a lot of government schemes for women entrepreneurs. To tell you the truth, in the villages, at least where we are, they're not reaching the last mile. I feel the schemes are there, but the implementation is not as robust as it should be. I feel government should engage with NGOs like us to identify these women, because sometimes we also hear from the local panchayat saying, we don't even know which women, who wants to get this. All of Buzz's work, we actually try and do it along with the PDO, the Panchayat Development Officer, so that they know that we can help you identify the women who want to start enterprises. The processes are still cumbersome. Accessing a loan for the women, the banks are not yet as sensitized as it should be. A lot of banks are, it all depends on the individual manager. That's what we have realized. But a lot of banks are also struggling with the paperwork that they have to go through. So we have to come up with a slightly easier mechanism of doing this rather than a 20-page document that the women have filled, which we are helping now to fill. But can there be more that, you know, that the government can do with easing the process, so ease of doing business, right? There are enough women in the villages who want to start enterprises, who want to do something. One, there is a lack of imagination as to what it is. So most often it is agarbatti and candle and things like that. So we are also nudging that with our Buzz Green program to identify the basket of needs in the villages and see, is there something that I can replace, which the women or the households are already consuming? So ideas like tooth powder or, you know, cleaning products or brooms that are being bought now, made in factories. So are there things that can be locally produced because of the local availability of raw material and also the local market that is available? So what is required is, one, like I said, ease of doing business. Can we look at the processes itself? There is a long turnaround time that is taking place right now in regard to a scheme getting approved to actually getting on the ground and getting delivered. So can we look at those things, engage more with the grassroots NGO to be able to identify the right women who are willing to do this and invest in a lot of training? A lot of women are starting businesses which are not sustaining. They're shutting it down in a couple of months or a couple of years because they don't have the right business acumen to be able to run the businesses profitably, because they are coming from, let's say, somebody who's gone till 8th standard in school, is very zealous, has the ambition, but at the same time, she needs the right kind of tools and skills and knowledge for her to be able to deliver or to be able to run that business well, which is, again, what is missing, I feel, right now.
Great. So, Uttara, are there schemes that you saw that became like a huge success, which was something that people were aware of, they had access to, or invariably it's been, if you can just kind of share about few schemes that you think went well and how did that, you know, work out? Because maybe, you know, there was more awareness around it or people spoke about it. So if you could share any of those experiences.
So two schemes that we keep hearing about is, one is the Udyogini scheme and the other is the Mudra loan scheme, because right, one, there has been enough, I guess, advertisement or publicity around it. And we have also been talking as NGOs, we have also been going to the grassroots and talking about this, saying apply for this. But again, I don't know how much of it has been delivered. Women are applying, but there seems to be, women are not really getting all of it. There are glitches in the process. Banks are also becoming a bottleneck sometimes in releasing it. So I don't know, has anything, I mean, government might say differently in terms of success. They might have statistics for it. But at least where we are present, there is still a struggle. Some of them are getting it, of course, but not everybody. I feel it can be much more successful.
Okay, so I want to ask one question, which might be a little controversial in nature, but I have some context for it. So I attended a workshop conducted by Raisen Gupta, and she talked about a program that she implemented at Oxford, in which they transferred a particular sum of money to pregnant women's account in Myanmar. And they saw that a lot of that money was actually taken away by the men in their lives. So it could be their fathers or it could be their husbands. That's the kind of question I want to ask in the work that you're doing, or in general with your experience working with rural women, the authoritative figures in their lives. I don't want to just talk about the men, but the authoritative figures in their lives, do they impede or empower the process?
I don't think the question is controversial at all, because I feel it is a relevant question to be asked coming from the culture that we do. I don't want to give a straight answer, because every household is different and every woman, how she handles her household is different. So I don't know if there's a blanket answer, because everybody says, oh, India is like this or this, South India is like this, North India is like that. You could, I mean, as a statement, you could. But what we have seen is, you're right, the authoritative figure is also only learning from the authoritative figure that was there previous to them. So it is not a blame on that person who is behaving a certain way. It is just that's what they have seen done. Most often women are able to, with our training sessions, able to counter that, because we concentrate on this a lot. One of the things I keep saying is dialogues can solve any problem, which is missing in this world right now, which is also true for families as well. So how the women are able to go and have these conversations. And for that, that's what we do. We do sessions on active listening. We do role plays on conversations with a difficult. So there is one on a positive way of doing it, one where there is a difficult situation, how you do it. So it's like a how you build that skill, which I think, see, by the way, none of us were actually taught this. We have all learned it as on the go. And some of us have coaches, thankfully, now to sort of navigate relationships. Relationships are the biggest issue. Even the authoritative figure you're talking about, it's about relationship, right? The power dynamic, who holds the power. So yes, what you say is true. Even the loans that the SHG women are getting, some of it actually is taken away and the men are using it, or the authoritative, sorry, not the men, the authoritative figures are using it for something else. But it is because those people feel, the figures feel that, oh, this is what is relevant now. If the women have one belief in themselves, they believe they're worth it, they can ask these questions, they find the self-efficacy and the agency to be able to bring out these conversations at home. I have evidence, both empirical and anecdotal, to say that it works. People can change the decision-making power in their households. I mean, I can give you this example of, you know, I remember one of the women, I think Sujata, and one of the villagers who told me that, before, she would be scared to even ask her husband and her in-laws to say, can I go to my mother's house? She was scared to even ask that question. Imagine such a woman, would she even have a conversation around finance? She's not going to. But now she says, I find it so much easier to have any difficult conversation, because I know that this is how I'll navigate. I will make sure all of them are, you know, in a better mood. They're all sitting together. I'll go have this conversation and say, why? I'll put up my case saying, this is why I'm asking this question. This is why we need to do this. And I showcase that it is for the family, that I'm not asking for something where I'm going to take away the power. I feel this skill is not been built, and it has to be built. And that's what we are trying to do. If you build the skill of having the conversations, difficult conversations, in a way that is beneficial for the larger good, which is the family in this case, or the community in some cases, then you will get the response that you are looking for positively.
Great. And my last question to you would be, according to you, what are some realistic aspirations you have for women's labor force participation in India? We've been reading so many news reports, and a lot of research is going on this area on why women's labor force participation in India is declining. So I would like to know from you what your hopes are with respect to this.
I hope that definitely that women participate more, they come out, because I feel violence against women outside of their house will reduce definitely when they're on the streets, I mean, because there are more women out there. You need to have visibly more women out. So I feel that is very important. But at the same time, I also feel it has to be the choice of the women and the family. They need to decide together what is relevant, what do they really want to achieve as a family, and then take those decisions. And for that to happen, they need to have all the information. Women need to feel that I have the information that I need to make the right choices for myself and for my family. So, you know, it's a more emotional answer, I would say. Of course, there are enough data out there to show how the GDP will increase with more women participating. And I'm not going to quote all the statistics because, you know, I'm sure the audience already knows that. But I feel it is about the choices to be made. Just because a woman comes out and participates in the workforce doesn't mean she's empowered at home, by the way. Doesn't mean that there is lesser violence at home. So there is a holistic angle to this that we need to take, and we need to be able to provide those spaces for women to have these conversations and to be able to gather these information for themselves, skills for themselves to be able to take those decisions.
Thanks a lot for answering that question. And with that, I'll end the podcast. Thanks a lot, Uthra and Soumya, for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Uthra. Thank you. Thank you for this opportunity. Bye. It's been a great conversation.
Yeah.
If you liked our show, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. You can tune into them on the IVM Podcast app, ivmpodcast.com, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow IVM on social media. The handle is @IVMPodcasts on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And hey, if you'd like to dive into Takshashila's research on technology, strategy, and economic affairs, check us out at our Twitter handle, @TakshashilaInst, or our website, takshashila.org.in.